My name is Andreas Färber. I'm going to talk about porting OpenSUSE to MIPS. This is another talk from the missing manuals category about OBS. And once again, it's not showing. Just a second. There we are. Okay, so before I start with the actual talk, a few words about this talk. So if you're already starting to Google for OpenSUSE on MIPS because you're seeing the title of this talk, then you won't find any results for that yet. There have been a number of previous talks about porting OpenSUSE to architectures, such as to ARMv7, ARMv6, and AR64. Also, there's Jan was working on a port to Spark 64, and Andreas Schwab has been maintaining a port for Motorola 68K. But if at all, then people have been talking about the story that they have ported something in OpenSUSE. But what I was really missing is more detailed information on how do I actually port OpenSUSE to something new. So this talk will focus highly on the Open Build Service and not so much on particularly MIPS architecture. This is roughly the outline. First, I'm going to talk about porting OpenSUSE in general, then moving on to specifically for MIPS, the Open Build Server setup that I've been using, and then the workers, and finally the status of where I have been lately. So first of all, a thought. Why would anyone want to port OpenSUSE to a new architecture when it's working on, say, an Intel notebook, already on ARM servers and boards of all kinds? Well, many of us really like OpenSUSE, or at least are used to OpenSUSE and would like to run the same environment on the various hardware that we have access to. Then another aspect, of course, is learning how OBS and bootstrapping OpenSUSE actually works, and what is actually like the core that makes up the distribution that we use every day. And also kind of as a side effect, I was interested in having a test setup specifically for KVM on MIPS, where I'm working on KVM on my day job. And also, since QEMU is being used for as emulation frontend for KVM, and this also has the side effect that the Linux user emulation of QEMU can get some more testing. When we're talking about bootstrapping a port, bootstrapping OpenSUSE, then this refers to that when we want to build a particular package, and I'm assuming that most of you have a rough idea about packaging regular packages for OpenSUSE, then if you take a look at a package such as RPM, then that package too has dependencies such as GCC and probably even more, whereas GCC once again depends on RPM for packaging the actual build results, so we have cyclic dependencies between individual packages. And the idea of a bootstrap is that we take a set of packages, I'm going to come to which those are later in the talk, and use those packages to rebuild those packages with the help of OBS so that we have an assurance that the package, the resulting packages have actually been built from the sources that are checked into OBS. And obviously, once we have those core set of packages and building, then OBS can do the regular work that I guess we all know. So, as a first step, it is possible to import binary packages into the OBS server. There is documentation on that, both in the wiki and in manuals. So for example, if you want to build packages for a new distribution, then you just can take like from a CD media all the RPM packages, copy them into a specific repository subfolder on the OBS server directory, and from there on you can use those packages to build your packages against. I've written down for reference the command that can be used in this particular case to import the binaries into such a colon full subdirectory. And this works by simply taking the actual RPM name and simplifying it to a form that OBS expects, and making sure that OBS has access rights to, has the right permissions to access the files that we've imported there. Now, obviously, once we know that we can import RPM files for this way, for the purpose of porting, is the big question is, where do we actually get the RPM files that we can do, if the actual goal that we have is building RPM files that we can use on a particular platform? For one part, any non-architecture-specific packages, those .noarch RPM files, can be imported right away, since there's no architecture-specific bits in there. And then, of course, there's the option of packaging either foreign or cross-compiled binaries as RPM that RPM can that OBS can then continue to work with. So one example of such foreign packages would be if there is already, say, a Debian distribution running on an architecture such as MIPS. Might it be possible to use the deb packages and just create RPM packages out of them that OBS can then continue working with? Alternatively, there is the option of just using the RPM tools itself for building an RPM. I've tried that once or twice. The example would be on this MIPS board here. This was recently launched. This is the Creators CI20 by MIPS using an Ingenix SOC. I'm going to talk about the spec slide later. So if you already have such a system working, then of course you have the possibility to build native packages if you have the right tools. However, the dependencies that you have installed on such a system might not be exactly what OpenSUSE is expecting. And also the way that the RPM tool is configured, in particular the RPM build tool is configured on other distros, might also not be the exact way that our OBS OpenSUSE setup expects. But when we're looking at building packages on our own, and in particular, you know, after the second or third package that I try to actually do this, it gets pretty boring and complicated job. And obviously, the Open Build Service is a software that is primarily focused at building packages. So here the idea is, can we actually use OBS to build those base set of packages? What we would need for that, since the assumption is that OBS itself is not yet running on a MIPS architecture, is to use a cross-compiler. But how does it actually work to use a cross-compiler for such packages in OBS? One approach that had been there before for the ARM port was the so-called QMU-XL package. The idea was that we could use, once we already had the bootstrap of an ARM port, that it was taking quite a lot of time to emulate things, and that was the reason why they tried to inject host binaries into the build image. So this package would actually take the x86-64 binaries, such as SED, Bash, and so on, some that were frequently being used, and make sure that the host architecture's binary were being used for the non-native builds. They were using the Ice Cream GCC compiler environment to do so, and this package then gets aggregated from x86 architecture repository into the, in that case, ARM repository. The question where I was not quite so sure is whether this would actually work for an initial bootstrap. And I also heard from Dirk and the other people who had been working on that for the ARM port that it was very difficult to maintain over time, so that they literally gave up on this particular approach. So what other opportunity is there? That's kind of the obvious answer, is to cross-compile all the packages. That is not quite straightforward in OBS. So the approach that I've been taking is that I have prepared a cross MIPSL GCC5 compiler package. I'm going to talk a bit more about cross compilers in general in the next presentation. And with this particular build requires in your package, you can then add to the configure command line that normally we would just use the percent %configure macro. We would add a dash dash host parameter to set the target to something that is not the usual build target. And in some cases, depending on how the cross compiler is configured in packages, we might also need to override something like the CC variable or some special package specific configure argument or make variable in order to select like the, in this case, MIPSL, SUSE Linux, GCC dash 5 package and not just with the prefix of the architecture in front of it. Then once we proceed to the installation stage in the spec file, then instead of just using Destr equals percent build root or RPM build root, we would just add a SUSE root component on that. That is slash USR slash and then the triple for the particular architecture followed by slash SUSE root usually. That's how our binutils is configured. And one important thing in the installation step is also to suppress any debug info handling. For one, we don't actually need debug info packages for these here. And the other issue is that the stripping and post-processing of those non-native binaries does not always work actually. So sometimes you might end up with the broken binaries in the package. In particular, when you're dealing with a binary that depends on a number of libraries, it makes perfect sense, or even if it's like libraries that depend on other cross-compiled libraries, it makes sense to add explicit requires for those package names, something that is usually forbidden for packages that you submit to factory. That is because RPM does provides for the library names usually, but it does not understand that there are native and non-native binaries, and it will add the same provides name for both that are confusing OBS dependency handling. In that same context, it may also be necessary to add prefer statements to the project config that you're in the project that you're building in, so that you still prefer the host versions of the libraries, because it might otherwise say that it's got multiple packages that provide a certain SO library. And this happens in particular when we're dealing with building the actual GCC compiler for the target architecture, is that you will end up building the GCC dependency libraries such as MPFR, MPC, and some other one. And then you have the situation that you need not one or the other, but you actually need both installed. And that's why you need to then add explicit build requires for those library requires in addition to the prefers. Now, as far as an actual cross-compiled package goes, I have assumed that for testing purposes, I might actually want to install packages for multiple target architectures in parallel. So that means that you can think about you want to cross-compile for both ARM and MIPS, or even if you're thinking about MIPS, then there may be different ABIs that you're targeting, such as MIPSL, MIPS, MIP64, MIP64EL, or even more, depending if you look in, you know, there's ABI differences like O64, N32, and so on. You might want to have those in parallel, and that means that you need different naming schemes. Different naming schemes usually mean that you actually have to either create separate packages or use scripts to generate those particular spec files, and that's what I've taken here. So we have, as in some of the packages in OpenSUSE that you may have seen, there's a pre-check-in script that takes a templated spec file, this one over here, and it generates several packages from it. So for example, we would take a cross-sev.spec.in and create a cross-mipsel-sed-spec from that one. We also need to have RPM lint RC files, because otherwise there will be quite a lot of not just warnings, but also errors about the binaries not being in the right path, and post unhooks missing for LDD. Yes, that is another component that's needed of every cross-compiled package. And then obviously you need to have a changes file simply to please OSC on check-in, and it doesn't really need to have much contents if you're doing that on your own, but you need to have it there and you need to copy it for the individual packages over by the check-in script. Of course, whenever there's a rule, there's exceptions to the rule. So in this case, SED is a very simple example, whereas if we have the GCC package, then we will actually be using the GCC5 package to be building the cross MIPSL GCC5 package. But if we actually, this resulting compiler would be the one that runs on the host architecture. But we also want a GCC compiler that runs on the target architecture. So basically, in addition to the original GCC5 package, I also needed a cross GCC5 package, and then I needed some different name. I know Canadian cross is not quite the same. That's one step more complicated, but I just needed a way to distinguish the two. For many packages, this scheme works quite nicely. However, there are exceptions to that rule yet again. The most notorious one is Perl, where the only way to officially build for different architecture is if you have an SSH connection to a machine of that architecture available that like your configure make files can actually connect to and get results back that have been executed natively. The solution here is that there is a GitHub project called the Perl Cross, and this is for a particular version of Perl, a set of patches on top that make those checks available in a way that work for real cross compilation. Because as you might have experienced, OBS when building runs the builds in a sandbox, so you don't have any network connection to the outside. At the end of this, you would have a package called cross-mipsel- and then the package name. Now our next goal is, how do we actually get this package into a form that has the right name and installs the files to the right location? In particular, we don't. We will have to relocate the files from USR target triple sysroot to just the slash root. For this purpose, the setup I've chosen is to use one project per architecture, because the outcome can always be the package name that OBS or OpenSUSE particularly expects, which means that I can just use the project configuration to set the target architecture and some things like that, and can spare myself the generation of multiple spec files. I would then just add a build requires for the cross package, and then my trick here is to use RPM to first obtain the list of the files that are actually contained in the cross package, and then use that list of files in order to move them from the original location to the install location where we have them, which is the instead of on the last slide. Where do we have it? Right here. So we were installing to destir build root sysroot, and now we just want to install to destir build root. And for simplicity, I've simply made this package noarch. Of course, that's a fake one, and also needs an rpm lint.rc file to suppress any warnings or errors for that. And in some cases, I've taken the step of not packaging them properly with lots of sub-packages, but simply packaging just them very quickly in one package. And in that case, I can just simply add additional provides like for develop packages or specific lib name 0.1 or whatever version packages. Now the full set of cross-compiled packages is this one. This is quite similar to what you can see in the web interface of OBS. If you look at a project such as OpenSUSE :factory, then if you click on a particular build repository, then it shows you a list of cycles. There's more than just with one. This is the base one that I've been looking into for MIPS. I won't read all the package names. I hope you can still read it where you're sitting. There are two that are in braces here. The reason is that the way that I prepared my my cross compiler, I already named the packages and organized the packages in a way that I would already by building the cross compiler have the packages for this cross compilation setup later on. And also while doing this, while some of this was pretty stupid work on a couple of weekends and some of the Christmas vacation days, I actually noticed that there are some core packages that we may actually want to update in factories. So it seems that we're like two versions behind on some of the SE Linux libraries. I'm not sure if there's a particular reason, but maybe if someone knows, that would be nice if they can bring it up, whether this is worth actually submitting or whether there's a particular incompatibility that we're dealing with. For now, I just took the same versions as OpenSUSE does for safety. In addition to that list of packages that you just saw, I also took a handful of noarch packages simply from the OpenSUSE factory published repository from the download on OpenSUSE.org. Also, there were a few packages where I took the quick path, the shortcut of simply taking a package of a different architecture, simply because there were no real architecture code in there, but just some architectural if arts in there for determining which config or text files to put in there, such as is it a 64-bit system or is it a 32-bit system, or there were like some specific configurations for S390X in there that obviously I don't need when I'm dealing with other architectures. Even worse than that, in particular, when I got to rebuilding packages, I instead of just rebuilding all linked packages from OpenSUSE factory, I branched particular packages into my build repository. Examples were autoconf, automake, simply because the info, the make info utility for building the documentation also has a second cyclic dependency that I was trying to get around here. And for that reason, I simply just patched packages to have less dependency so that they actually could start building with those set of cross-compiled packages that I just listed. And apart from not starting to build packages where you already know that they cannot possibly succeed, it also has the benefit that the scheduling is a little bit quicker, and you may understand why I was looking into that in the next section of the talk. So this is basically how I organized the packages so far, and now the question is, where do I actually build those packages? for specifically the Mimbox architecture. Because if you look on build.openzuse.org, you will notice that we have schedulers for i586, x86-64, PPC64LE, PPC, PPC64, S290X, ARMv6L, ARMv7L, and AR64. There are no for MIPS or MIPS64. And the hypothetical question here is, well, do we have resources to build everyone's favorite project? So it's not really apparently provisioned that, you know, if someone says, hey, I want to do a port of OpenSUSE for an architecture that hardly anyone uses, that we can just get that set up on the main server. And also most prominently, I personally, even though I work for SUSE, it doesn't mean that I actually have access to all those servers that this infrastructure is running on. So I can't just use the copy operations that I outlined on an earlier slide in order to import my binaries there. And in some cases, in case something goes wrong, I may also need to mess with either updating the QMB Linux user packages, configuring them for the bin format MIS kernel module, and do other stuff that require root permissions on the particular host machine. There, of course, is a relatively easy solution. OBS has a feature called Remote Link, which allows you to take an OBM server of your own, install it wherever you are, not on the SUSE network, not necessarily, and connect it to the build.openzuse.org instance, or more specifically, api.openzuse.org, and have them obtain packages from there and kind of monitor what check-ins are being done there and automatically download all the sources and then do the building on your own hardware. That's the theory so far. Now, as for the practice, well, where would I install the OBS server to do my my builds? And the fastest Intel machine that I have accessible is, well, this notebook right here, and for one, I want to disconnect this notebook from power once in time, and I also need to do other like larger compile jobs and so on that consume CPU, so I did not want to actually do this on my own notebook. So some of it think this is a crazy solution. For me, it was a really cool thing to actually try out. Since I've been working on the OpenSUSE ARM port myself, I do have a lot of ARM hardware standing around at home. And when I'm not actively working on the kernel or testing whether something is working or broken, then they're either not connected to power or they're just standing around and doing nothing. For example, I have like a DHCP server or things like that running on ARM boards, but they're not really using much. And I thought that's like a, you know, a CPU resource that under some constraints might actually be usable as OBS server. What I actually ended up choosing is the Firefly RK3288 board. Didn't bring it along today. There's probably an image of that on the OpenSUSE wiki on the HCL pages. If not, then please bug me to finally update that. The reason I chose that particular one is simply because it's got the only one that I had access to that has a Cortex A17 CPU, which in theory is the fastest 32-bit CPU core that ARM provides. And to that, I plugged an external USB hard drive, not necessarily an SSD. I just took a regular hard drive and connected that via USB. In this case, there was no USB 3.0 available, so I had to take USB 2.0. And in case that things were going well, I also had larger ones prepared. However, when I actually had that idea, there were no ARM binaries available for OBS to download. So I had OpenSUSE Tumbleweed running on that particular board, but no OBS. So what I actually ended up doing is, because the only version of OBS that at the time was supporting OpenSUSE Factory, or well, the Tumbleweed repository, was OBS Server Unstable. So what I took is the packages from that particular repository, branched them so that they would build for a newly set up OpenSUSE Factory ARM repository for ARMv7L. And I ended up taking some, in particular, RubyGem packages from OpenSUSE Tumbleweed, and then adding those packages that are not in Tumbleweed from the OBS server unstable repository at the time. Those were about 24 packages, many Ruby gems. There was a Perl BS solve and the Apache mod X forward package, I think. By now, the situation has improved in that OBS Server Unstable is building OpenSUSE Factory ARM for both AR64 and ARMv7L. So I've been able to delete most of the branch packages in the weeks leading up to the conference. One other aspect is that when we're looking at ARM boards, unlike Intel machines, only very few, unfortunately, have support for KVM. And the problem is usually not on the KVM side, but rather on the bootloader side, that simply they're booting the CPU in a mode that does not have sufficient privileges to enter the hypervisor mode. With only there's like the SunXi boards that have KVM enabled, and there's the Arndale board. Some servers that are not on the market anymore from Calceda, and that's roughly it. So the choice was that instead of KVM, I would be using change root workers. And this was not a problem because I was using a very select set of core packages where I was actually able to review that there was, at least on first sight, nothing malign in there that would actually damage the security of my onboard that I was using for little more than testing the kernel anyway. Specifically, when using this combination of Tumbleweed and OBS Server Unstable repository, from time to time, there were either packages that were newer on the OSU side or on the Tumbleweed side. And the only thing that was affected by that was the API server. So the backends are written in Perl mostly and just run. There's no real problems been there, but the Ruby UI would not come up in the web browser. So what I figured out that was the main issue was the gem file dot lock in this particular path here. And this actually says that a dependency of the OBS-API project, this particular web application is a package in a specific version. This is now not the one that I actually tested this with. This is the one that is current. So the gemfile.log currently says that it wants certain Ruby on Rails packages in version 4.2.5.2, whereas Tumbleweed provides version 4.2.6. So basically, with simple regular expressions, I simply tweaked this file to have the right versions, and the way to test whether this actually works was to simply run the rake command in that directory with the right Ruby version. This worked pretty well. Initially, it totally worked. Then at some point, MIMETYPES was updated in Tumbleweed, and then it no longer worked. So the OBS API server was using MIMETYPES in Sun 1. Whatever version. Tumbleweed had version 2, that still worked fine, and then it got updated to 3, and then suddenly it broke. That's a bit the risk in this scenario of using untested package versions. And of course, this risk could come from both sides, so it was too dangerous to simply run zipper dupe, so I was very careful to usually first run zipper up to just have a much more control over which packages were coming from which repositories and avoiding that they would automatically switch the vendor from one repository to another. Like I said, this worked fine until it broke, and unfortunately it broke like 1.5 weeks ago, and that is unfortunately the reason why I can't show you the nice web interface in a live demo here. If you have any suggestions on how we might actually be able to continue on with this port in the most sensible way, in particular, since there's been at least one person that's shown interest in collaborating on this particular port during Hack Week next week. One idea was that we might use a test instance of OBS elsewhere, but then again, the question is, which workers can we actually use to build the MIPS packages, which happens to be the next section. So, as described in the section before the last, I have managed to cross-compile a large set of packages that are needed for initial package building of OpenSUSE, OpenSUSE Factory. Now, how do we actually build OpenSUSE Factory with those particular packages for the MIPS architecture? In particular, we already have an OBS server. How do we actually set up OBS build workers for MIPS? And the main idea, the very simple one, naive one, is to simply run OBS workers on whatever hardware and setups we happen to have. So what might that be? If we take a look at a random Linux distribution, then chances are that there is no OBS-worker package available, which is the easy way to install workers on the OpenSUSE distribution. That works quite nicely. It's also an OWASH package with only a rather small set of dependencies. Unfortunately, OBS server, which was my first thought, was, you know, can I just build OBS worker for another distro in the build service? Unfortunately, it's built as part of OBS server, which has lots and lots of dependencies. Can someone get Adrian a microphone? I do have some more slides with workarounds of the problems, in case you want to comment on that. Not on?
So OBS worker is actually only the init script. It downloads the code from the server and executes it.
I will get to that in a minute.
Okay, and sure. Okay, then.
Okay.
But
so because it looked as if it had a lot of dependencies, I gave up on trying to build this, in particular for Debian in this case. And well, or at least the second thought after seeing those dependencies was, you know, how do you actually build the package for a repository that you don't have, in particular when non-OWASH packages are involved? And this is the Creator CI20 package again. It's running, if you just receive it, it's running a Debian Wheezy system with the MIPSL ABI. I did not really see the benefits of trying to import a whole Debian distribution into the OBS just in order to build an OpenSUSE distribution, so I wondered whether there was a simpler way, and as you already heard from Adrian, there is a simpler way. And the simpler way is to simply learn and understand what the OBS worker actually is doing. So this particular board here, the Creator CI20 happens to have a gigabyte of RAM, which is compared to many other ARM devices that people like Max Reinhardt have been working on, is quite a lot for MIPS purposes. For reasons that I don't want to further go into, is I upgraded from Debian 7 to Debian 8 to have certain package dependencies available. There's instructions for this particular board available on the elinux.org wiki. And then from the OpenSUSE tools repository, I managed to install the build package and some of its dependencies, which again was using also other dependencies that were already available in the Debian distribution. what it really needs to do is it simply gets the Perl code for running the worker from the repository server, from your local one. So you can simply look up what it does on the file system, and that's pretty much a curl command to download from this particular with the cursor. Here it is. To download the code, and then it is being downloaded as a CPIO archive, and then you just extract that to some local temporary directory of yours. There's also a few post-download steps that are simply just copied from that script as well, and then I used a simplified command line for the BS worker script in order to launch the local instance, in this case just one, since it's got a dual core setup with two jobs specified for both cores. And yes, those are just like local directories in the file system where various files are going to get installed. So since we now know how OBS Worker is actually working, I had the problem, and maybe Adrian, I don't know if that is a problem that's already been solved or not. I ran into the issue that sometimes my workers would get a build job dispatched, but instead of receiving the source code of the packages the usual way, there's like a three-step status output that they show initially, it was just getting binary garbage. And in particular, at times, those binary sequences would also contain like the control A sequence that the screen command uses to set, for instance, the title or some other attributes of the running screen session. I found that very annoying, and I set out to write a systemd service for that. So the setup that I've tested in the package, which by the way is in my home a_farber branch, I think it's branches OBS server unstable. I'm available for anyone that wants to peek at that. Is I simply separated into two service files, one for the boot code download that we just saw, and the other one for running the actual change root service in this particular case, because I didn't actually ended up using KVM on my build workers. I didn't set out to set a worker for those as well, but in theory it should all work in the same way that you configure the systemd service unit file in the way that is appropriate for the command that you're about to launch, and then use some variables in order to have a placeholder for what it should actually be using. Then you can set the environment equals setting of the service unit file in order to have some defaults. By the way, there is a nice blog post from Derex on nordisch.org where you can read up on some of those systemd concepts. And then you can actually have a file in etc systemd system service name .d slash, in this case service.conf, where you can override those values with new values. So basically you would have like a default of localhost.52.52, and then in my case I would say that in default of in place of localhost 5252, I would take fels.lan:5252. Yes, and it also gives a bit more flexibility in that you can simply use the instance name here. That's what the at sign in this service here is about, is that you can actually have multiple instances of this running. So you can either just have a change root at one, as it was as it used to be, or you could actually use a name, and in theory that should work just the same. Any immediate comments you have on that, Adrian?
It's good that someone is working on systemd files.
Could you please speak up?
It's great that someone is working on systemd files for that, but that sounds like you are ignoring all configurations in etc sysconfig OBS server.
That is correct. Yes.
So why do you do that? I mean, isn't it? I mean, now we would need for each kind of virtualization, we need own service files, right? That would make it much, much more complex.
Well, basically, the reason was, or one of the reasons was, that I did not want to run the BS worker script because it was not working as I described. In particular, it kept, you know, having this problem that it was badly affecting the screen process, which is, you know, what it does at the end and it spawns, and therefore I couldn't reuse the BS worker script.
Okay, I have no clue about binary garbage. By the way, it must be a bug somewhere, but so it needs debugging. Then
it might be possible to reuse the etc sysconfig obs-server file. To initialize some of that, either to have like a script that takes it as an input and generates those systemd config files in etc, or uses some symlink facility. I just simply did not spend a lot of cycles on that.
I would really like to have the systemd files, but not surprised that everything is incompatible. So we should really keep the sysconfig.
Sure, but the main thing here is that I am relying on systemd not just to have like the old-fashioned script that you already have being wrapped in a systemd service unit, but I really wanted to think about how can we actually improve things in a only systemd world. And in particular, that means that in difference to the BS worker script, I've separated the boot code download, which is like an if somewhere at the beginning of the BS worker script, from that particular file. And that also means that I thought it would be easiest to have separate service files for what the particular workers would actually be doing, because there's a whole lot of configuration settings and parameters that only apply to one of them but not for the other. For example, if you take a look at the command line down here, I don't need to specify any kernels simply because for a change root, I don't use any kernels. And there's, I don't know, like at least a handful of like variables and settings that simply don't apply to everything. So basically what you are saying is that you would favor just an obs-worker at dot service, or is it this split that you are also opposed to?
No, the split is fine, I think. It's just that we need a migration point, and if you switch from Xen to KVM, that you rewrite all your configurations makes no sense for me, because it's same memory usage, same, and so on. So that's, yeah.
There might obviously be ways to simply share those environment variables between the two services. The question, what is easier? In this case, I mean, there is a reason why this is a dot service file that is in my home repository and not a commit that I've made to the OBS build server Git repository. So it's not really consumable by everyone, but it was just a path that I have explored in order to make it easier to bring, or at least more and more stable to have workers running on some of my hosts. Another idea was that if I have like this 64-bit MIPS box, was previously called on Kickstarter the iGuardian, and then it was in this case called the Shield, but now it's called the Shield Pro. It's running on a Octeon 3 processor, and that is one that actually supports hardware virtualization, which was interesting to me as a virtualization developer. And then also I recently received this particular board from AsiaRF, which has a MediaTek MIPSOC. And then I also, as part of previous hack weeks, was taking apart various routers, which is like the number one source of devices in the world where you find MIPS processors still. And there's kind of like a range of specs that you will find there. So 1 gigabyte of RAM obviously is, well, We've been able to deal with that to some degree on ARM boards. Obviously, two would be better, but if we only have one, that works as well. 128 megabytes might actually work for running OpenSUSE at some point, but 32 megabytes well, are probably too little, not just to run on there, but in particular when it's about building things like GCC and other large packages. Most of those boards come with either OpenWRT or just some custom BusyBox-based system. In case you're not familiar with BusyBox, that's like an all-in-one static executable, which contains both shell functions and some of the functionality that we find in like core utils and other external packages in OpenSUSE. And it usually means that in that setup, there's very little tools available. In particular, you usually will not find Perl, and the BS worker script obviously uses Perl to run in various Perl modules. So one thought that I have not yet investigated is whether it might actually work to take the packages that I have cross-compiled myself in the previous stack and just put them into such a BusyBox build system in order to complement the binaries, or maybe just boot into that particular file system constructed from those core packages. Or would it be worth to take such a BusyBox or OpenWRT-based system and have another MIPS-based distribution with Perl and other dependencies on there? There's always, a trade-off of, how much time does it actually cost me to learn about different distros and how they're set up and how things are going to work, as opposed to can I just work around that on the OpenSUSE side? And in particular, since I happen to work on QEMU, it was quite easy for me to just use emulation on a different architecture, in this case, on the ARM architecture, to emulate MIPS binaries using, in that case, QEMU-MIPSL on the OpenSUSE factory ARM systems. To do so, I would just aggregate the host's QEMU Linux user package, have an export filter so that it actually gets exported from ARMv7HL in this case to the MIPS scheduler. And then in the project configuration, we also need to set the host architecture that a particular repository, if you make a specific conditional for that, actually gets dispatched to by the OBS dispatcher. And then as the next step, also have inside the change root the QEMU Linux user package pre-installed. Actually, the build tool nags about the absence of a build init VM ARMv7, either HL or L package. I found that if I actually construct such a package, it does not work for the very simple reason that on each start of a build job, it will try to re-register all the bin format handling, and that fails if there is already a handler registered for a particular ELF magic string, or for the name of that particular architecture. So what I ended up doing is to have a simple shell script that was based on our QEMU, can't quite remember the name. So in the SBIN directory, there is a particular script installed by the QEMU Linux user package, which does that. I just grabbed the line which was specific to MIPSL. For the very simple reason that there is a bug in that script, in that two architectures, I think MIPSL and MIPS N32 or something like that. Oh no, MIPS and MIPSL actually have the same, whatever exact two architectures, two of them had the same magic string and that made the registration fail. So that's the reason why I choose a manual script for that. And I simply use the boot local script that's integrated into systemd to start that automatically whenever the build worker starts. Now finally to what you've probably been waiting for with 5 minutes left, the status of where we are. So don't be too excited about it. MIP64, that would have been for this board, I have not yet really focused at, simply because I don't have a full system where I can really actively test that yet. I have been mostly cross-compiling the MIP64 packages alongside MIPSL, simply because I wanted to avoid that I in the skeletons that I used for creating all those cross-compiled packages, hard code MIPSL everywhere. So I wanted to be able to also have like the right directory locations for the 64-bit ones. And then also I was unsure about should I be using MIP64 or MIP64EL. Maybe someone in the audience has opinions on that at the end. One concern I had was that this box here has a big endian kernel and it did not have the file utility in the BusyBox file system to actually check whether the binaries that they were using were big endian or little endian. And the other concern, of course, is that is it a good idea to try to build big endian binaries on little endian systems such as x86 or ARM? So let's move on to MIPSL. My OBS instance, before it stopped working, was able to build pre-install images. So that means that like the core packages, the very core set of cross-compiled packages were working sufficiently enough. And I could also start actual package builds. I could also use the OSC utility with appropriate commands with an alternative project to build packages or start building packages on the ARM architecture. That's where I tried it locally. And I could also use the OSC change root command in, once the build had failed in order to get into that system and interactively and play with those packages. Once I had such a extracted build change root, I was also able to just transfer that build root onto the onto this 32-bit ARM board here. At the time, I did not yet have the OBS build worker running there, so I just simply used SCP to transfer a tarball over there and extract that in there and do the change root manually. That also worked, and the results between the emulated system on ARM and the native MIPSL system were almost the same. So I believe the only difference that I saw was that like the command line editing was working in the change root environment on ARM with the emulation, and it was kind of broken on the Debian system. Also, some easy packages were almost succeeding to build, or at least they were succeeding to build and install, and were then failing with some seg fault or whatever exactly in the post-build scripts. What I in particular noticed was that, for example, if I were taking a very simple binary such as hostname, I think, then there were packaging issues starting to appear simply because the cross-build packages that I used initially were based on the upstream tarballs and not on the OpenSUSE factory packages, which turn out to have at least 20 packages on 20 patches on top of our RPM package in order to tweak the runtime behavior, the configuration of, you know, what it generates automatically, how it handles certain architecture names and so on. So it did not immediately work. So therefore I was focusing on getting the RPM package rebuild inside this particular setup. And unfortunately, so far, before things started to completely break, I failed with the automake script simply unexpectedly returning at some point. So I'm assuming that some tool like SED or something that is being invoked in there was not yet working as expected. So that mostly completes this talk. What questions are there?
Have you considered...
Please speak up.
Have you considered doing the initial bootstrap using real hardware instead and using the foreign distro mechanism instead of going cross-compiling?
Did you attend the beginning of the talk?
Not quite. I was held up elsewhere.
Okay, because I had shown slides about various approaches, and one was the QMU Excel approach that I was speaking about, and I had also looked into just using RPM build on Debian 7 for building like packages, but that led to, in particular around glibc, it was using provides that our packages were not very happy with. So it was like, I don't know, was it using a different scheme or different versioning, or there was some different that was incompatible between the two. Did you mean something else?
No, that's exactly it.
Okay.
In fact, this is the approach I was using, like...
Speak up. I didn't
expect anything else. In fact, this is the mechanism I used about 4 years ago when I started working on OpenSUSE for Spark.
Yeah. One idea. So Andreas Schwab is also one of those handful of experts who've been using with porting OpenSUSE to different parts apart from you. He was suggesting that I could just take like the operating system and just, you know, like throw it into one big RPM file with, you know, lots of provides or something like that. But well, the rootfs that I had from Debian was like 2 gigabytes, and I didn't really feel like throwing all of that into one RPM package and then, you know, constantly reinstalling that. More questions? So maybe a quick survey from the people who are sitting in the audience who either has some device that is running MIPSL or would be interested in running OpenSUSE on some random MIPS device. So I'm seeing up to four hands. So obviously that's not a whole lot, but yeah, there were some people that might have been interested. So we'll just have to see in which place we can I can actually transfer the stuff that I have in order to allow collaboration. So one idea that Adrian brought up was to have like a test OBS server instance running somewhere that's separate from the main OBS instance, or some VPN or whatever setup to make that work in some way. Further questions? Or is, apart from Jan, anyone else here considering doing a port to a different architecture?
Well, the problem with porting to any other architecture than those what we already have is that hardware is hard to get at. So either it's overly pricey for hobbyists, or you get some crazy segmentation fault in the compiler which you don't know how to fix, and because there's no developer either, you're kind of stuck in that sense.
So yeah, what I was kind of hinting at here, so there's a couple of architectures that would be supported in QMU for allowing cross architectures. One that I was recently getting bugged about with CC emails is that someone was working on getting the TileGX emulation in QMU up to speed with the GCC test suite. There's like OpenRISC.
There is also K1OM. This was the current Knight's Landing preview something.
Okay.
Which is more or less x86, but again, there is the problem, how long is it going to be supported?
The hardware as an interesting target, or are you saying there's a QMU port for that?
Hardware as an interesting target, okay. Because it's fast and you can do native builds, which I think is a lot better than trying QMU in any way.
Sure, I would personally also be interested in that particular one. I just haven't had my hands on any Knight's Landing hardware myself. Do you have any?
No.
Okay. Okay. Any further questions or comments? Quite possible that I'm doing something totally stupid and could have spared work, but this was what I came up with, and like I said, it's one of those topics we don't really have a whole lot of documentation on how to do this because it's not done so frequently. Yes, please.
I ever of the autoconf automake feature that that makes possible to make a cache of the target.
Please hold it closer to the mouth. It's very hard to hear here.
I aware that that configure based on the automake is capable to create a cache of configure results on a host machine, so you can copy config.cache to the target machine, and configure script could reuse it.
I believe in some cases I may have had to resort to that. Yes, I think I put that inside the spec file. You know, like having. So it was definitely, I think it was less than 5 packages out of that very long list.
Yes, it's often broken. It's often broken out of the box. Just the configurer doesn't check for everything on the target and don't use cache for it.
Yeah, so if anyone is like an upstream maintainer or cares about this particular topic, then please feel free to patch various upstream packages to not rely on those host checks, but rather to use like a test compilation. There's even very cool ways to figure out whether you're running big endian or little in the, no, sorry, not whether you're running little endian, whether you're actually building for big or little endian simply by doing like a binary grep for a certain string or sequence of numbers that you actually used in the source code. So there's examples for many of those out there if you're unsure, and it's definitely the only way that really works universally. If there's no further questions, then thank you very much for your interest. And the next talk will be about building and making available cross-compilers for OpenSUSE Tumbleweed.